At this Shishin, we have been looking at the life of Siddhartha Gautama. Who exactly was this historical figure who went on to become the Buddha? We have no way to know for certain whether the traditional story of the Buddha's life we have been examining is factually accurate. However, historians tend to agree there was a historical Buddha, and he lived sometime in the 4th through 6th centuries BCE. When we read and or listen to the story of the Buddha's life, we might be inspired, but we might also be discouraged. After all, the Buddha started on his spiritual quest at age 29 and really went to some extreme measures before finding the middle way. But the middle way he did uncover. And in a lot of ways, the story of Siddhartha Gautama is our life story. As we have heard, Siddhartha Gautama was the son of a king and was raised in sheltered opulence. He supposedly married and had a son. His life was laid out before him. In many ways, not too different than us. By world standards, where some people subsist on a dollar a day, we too are born and live in opulence. We have plenty of food to eat. We sleep in warm, comfortable beds. And for the most part, we are in good health. Our society, in a lot of ways, shelters us from many of life's miseries. We have homeless shelters, unemployment checks, school lunches for kids, and for the most part, a decent social welfare system. We don't see the misery more prevalent in less developed countries. Certain diseases, such as malaria, cholera, tuberculosis, are unheard of in our country, yet accounts for many deaths in these less advanced countries. Most people in our society obtain a good education, and for the most part, opportunities abound. We have freedom to marry, choose a career, and earn enough money to maintain a healthy lifestyle. So why do we come to practice Zen? Why do we sit and meditate and feel our backs and knees ache? Why do we wrestle with our thoughts and emotions? Why do we devote such time to this endeavor? What was it that drove Siddhartha to leave his life of luxury and seek out some spiritual path? The only reasonable explanation is that Siddhartha, like us, had something inside of him that unsettled him. Something troubling, possibly the thought that there was more to life than getting a good education, pursuing a career, getting married, raising a family, and eventually dying. Unfortunately for many people, the existence of God, the meaning of life, do not formulate into heartfelt spiritual questions until they are pretty much at death's door. Someone once asked me, "What was the point of meditation? After all, are you not just going to die like everyone else? Why go through all that trouble?" How would you respond to that question? In our story of the Buddha's enlightenment, Siddhartha recalled, and I quote here, the memory of a certain festival day during his youth when he had been sitting quietly under a rose apple tree, watching his father, all the nobles and poor men alike, plowing the earth together. He became aware of the earth, breaking open in even wave-like furrows, the heat shimmering up off the freshly opened soil and shining on the sweat-slick brows and straining bodies of men and oxen alike. the sun, continuously flashing off the gilded traces and horns of the oxen, the senseless prodding rhythm of hoofs and cowbells rolling in a solemn sea-like wave beneath the shrill shouts of men and the remorseless whirling cries of the birds as they dove to peck and devour the billowing hordes of insects, blinding, glistening grubs, cutworms, and broken bodies of mice, which men, oxen, and plows lay in their wake. What was going on here? What did Siddhartha recall? Why did this memory spur him on? Can you feel what Siddhartha felt? Think back to your childhood. Was there something you recall that, like the Buddha, helped propel you on your spiritual journey? Were there questions that you felt needed answers? Were there experiences of restfulness or peace from maybe sitting in a church service or hearing a song of praise? Do not discount your childhood memories, for they are seeds which have fallen on fertile soil. For Siddhartha, his spiritual questions were once again aroused. He knew there was more to life than living, working hard, accumulating possessions, and then dying. As the story states, he was energized once again, filled with the excitement of his rediscovery, sure now that he had finally come upon the way he had been so ardently seeking those past 6 years, the way to supreme enlightenment. He decided to take proper nourishment once again. Siddhartha also realized the body itself is holy. Sitting up straight in zazen is enlightenment itself. All beings are holy, and we owe it to the world to uncover the truth that underlies all existence. Our bodies, our human shape, is a gift. Of all the millions of billions of life forms that inhabit this earth, very few are human. Human with the capacity to go beyond and extend understanding to all beings. Siddhartha understood that instead of punishing the body through extreme ascetic practices, he needed to discipline his mind in its myriad of thoughts. That is what we do when we sit quietly on our mats or in our chairs, when we walk quietly between rounds, prepare meals, or eat. We work to quiet the mind, to let thoughts come and go, to go deep into our practice, to become more intimate with everything that surrounds us, whether a beginning student or a student who has been practicing for many years. We continue to quiet the mind and allow all that is be. Do not add or subtract from that what surrounds you. Siddhartha reopened the path, a path that from time immemorial has never been closed. Siddhartha accepted a small meal of rice milk from a young woman. He regained a portion of his strength. He did not quit. How many of us get frustrated with sitting still, counting our breath, working on Mu or other koans? This path is not about reaching the number 10 in breath counting or passing X number of koans. This path is not about crossing the finishing line and calling it quits. This path is eternal. It is about sitting still, quieting the mind, and experiencing the emptiness that underlies all existence. You are one with the world, and the world is one with you. This is something that can only be pointed to. It doesn't matter your age, how long you have been practicing, your sexual orientation, your past, or whatever barrier you believe might prevent you from experiencing the truth. For the truth is freely available to all who step forward. Seek, and it will be given to you. Then, on the shore once again, his energies aroused, his mind and heart gripped by a fresh intensity of concentration, in deep sureness, he cast the empty offering bowl onto the rapidly flowing waters, calling out, "If this be the day of my supreme enlightenment, may this bowl float upstream." As soon as the bowl touched the swirling surface of the river, it forged upstream with the swiftness of a stallion until it came to the whirlpool of Nala Nagarjara, the Black Snake King, where it whirled down into the jeweled chambers of his underwater palace, settling at last against a long row of identically formed bowls. Yes, a long row of identically formed bowls. The Black Nara King slowly raised his ancient hooded head and cried, "Lo, yesterday a Buddha arose, and today there shall be another Buddha. Today there shall be another Buddha. Take your offering bowl and cast it into the rapidly flowing waters. Take your cares and frustrations and cast them aside. You are no different than Siddhartha. He had his doubts, frustrations, and feeling of being unworthy. Don't give up. Savaha, awake, rejoice." Thousands of hands are waiting to help you. You must put forth the initial effort. You must take the step. No one can walk this path for you. You must be determined. And the Bodhisattva Siddhartha Gautama, striding gracefully and energetically now, moved like a roused lion toward the bow tree. Can you move like a roused lion toward your breath, toward your koan? Just breathe one. Exhale. Breathe two. Exhale. Breathe three. Exhale. Can you be the monk who could have saved Nanchuan from cutting the cat in two? Can you hold your body completely still and allow the mind to settle? Can you walk gracefully and energetically while doing kinhin? Can you eat your meal and understand you eating the meal is enlightenment itself? Don't look outside yourself. Don't be caught up in your thoughts, your ongoing dialogue. For we are like the person who has had a stranger enter their clean house. The stranger tells us their life story. He or she relates to us everything that has gone wrong in their life, all the injustices they have suffered, all the people that have wronged them. We like this person. We begin to warm and accept the stranger into our home, offering them food just to hear their story. However, after a while, we notice that the stranger just sits around in our house. They don't clean. And there's something about this person that just doesn't seem right. We begin to wish the stranger would leave. We have an ancient memory of a house that was once clean. At first, we try to force the stranger out. We might even argue with him or her, telling him they don't belong. However, the more we try to force the stranger out, the more he or she resists. The stranger may even sing, play loud music, stand on their head, and try their best to keep our attention. At some point, we decide enough is enough. Life is short. There are questions we need to find answers to. We have a breath to concentrate on. We have a step to take. A carrot that needs to be cut. A spoon that needs to be brought up to our mouth. Let the stranger tell their story. Do their antics. Allow the stranger to be. Quiet your body. Concentrate on your practice. And by him or herself, the stranger will leave. Then, what is left? People view Zen practice as a training to gain enlightenment. This is not Zen. Whether you practice Zazen or not, you have Buddha nature. Because you have it, there is enlightenment every time you practice. However, we need to have strong confidence in our original nature and maybe most importantly, true sincerity. For it was this confidence and sincerity that allowed Siddhartha Gautama to see with his ears and hear with his eyes. The future Buddha touched the humble, ever-trodden earth lightly with his right hand and asked the earth to witness for him. And the earth replied with 100,000 voices. The voices of furrows and graves, the voices of youth and age, of men, women, and children, the unheeded cries of beasts, the quick, unknown, silvery language of fish, the sweet twinings of plants, and the warm, gray crumblings of stone, for all were at one voice, now thundering, "He is worthy." Do not believe for a second you are unworthy. The earth abounds with thousands and thousands of hands reaching out to you. You must make the effort. You must take the leap of faith. Allow everything, but cling to nothing. As I said, no one can walk the path for you. You must desire to know the answers to your spiritual questions. You must be like Siddhartha, willing to undergo certain hardships while practicing with a sincere heart. Time is short. Press endlessly on. Arouse deeper and deeper concentration. Practice without ceasing. Practice as you walk, as you shower, as you prepare a meal, as you eat a meal, as you drink your tea. Practice without faltering, without stopping anywhere, for your morning star awaits. With all beings, we attain Buddhahood.